Tennessee Tech alum Dr. Diane Murphy is back in Cookeville helping raise money for the Tucker Stadium expansion. The longtime athletic administrator at Columbia University and the University of Denver brings a unique perspective to the current goings-on in college athletics.
The money has exploded, and even if you support the idea of amateur athletics, it's hard to reconcile the money that the coaches are getting and the money that is being spent. And I know it's a limited number of universities, but the amount of money that's being spent on these facilities is it's really kind of gross.
Well, it's an arms race.
Yeah.
And here we have Tennessee Tech, who really hasn't done anything to Tucker Stadium, so to speak, to speak of, in 54 years, whatever. And then on the other end, which something needs to be done because there has been nothing done, so to speak. Then you've got on the other end of the continuum, the arms race to be ahead of the Joneses. And it's ridiculous. And so there's no happy medium. There's no middle ground here. And, you know, I look at what Florida State's doing. Well, Florida State's doing because of what, you know, their competitors are doing. And it just keeps escalating. And because everybody's looking for the competitive advantage. Everything we do in college sports has to do with finding the competitive edge. What can we do that we can beat that other institution, whether it's recruiting an athlete, whether it's building a facility, you know, whether it's, have our uniforms or our intellectual property. Everything is finding the competitive edge, and it's also all going back to the almighty dollar.
With NIL, they call it the Wild West. You may get free food at the local burger joint, and that be called NIL. But when we're talking about this big money, it's a very limited thing. Is that overshadowing what's really happening? Or does everybody think that everybody's making millions in every sport?
I think that's some of the perception. But you're absolutely right. It is a handful of people, and they're primarily at the Power Five. They're primarily in football. And I love football, so I'm not knocking football here. So, but then the other equation is, what happens to the young man or woman who's on the tennis team? What happens to the women athletes? Because there's only a handful of women athletes are being close to where getting the kind of money that some of the men are. So you still got to deal with equity. No one really knows how to address that yet because no one has taken anything to the Supreme Court or had any kind of legal implications yet. But that's coming. That's coming.
You do think a Title IX challenge
I think it's coming. I think it's a matter of time. And then I think about how do you say in that locker room to 105, 125 football players, okay, my quarterback is getting the NIL money for $1 million. An offensive line, you got an NIL deal for $5,000. How do you manage the locker room? How do you keep those guys together? And so I think there's a lot, and then the students don't realize that they got to pay income tax on this. And even though we've told them, they still don't get it. You know, and so if you become an employee, if these young men and women become employees, what the coaches are going to expect from them, it's not going to be 20 hours a week, which is what they're allowed to have now in season. It's going to be 30 hours a week. It's not going to be it's so we have to realize where we're going here. It's a dangerous territory.
Some have said that the answer is to make the athletes employees. Do you see that?
Yes, some people have. Absolutely, I'm not for it because these are college students. They should be here first to get an education. There's a minority of young men and women who will play pro sports. A minority, and most.
It's infinitesimal, really.
Yes, and most of them don't even want to. You know, they want to get on with their lives, and so I think that we're headed down a slippery slope.
Dr. Diane Murphy is our guest as we talk about the state of college athletics. Dr. Diane Murphy is our guest. She's working with Tennessee Tech back as an alum to help with the project at Tucker Stadium. She has spent her life in college athletics. I want to go back to the female athlete for a second. At a time where women's sports, it's certainly not equal in coverage or in interest to men's sports, but it has grown tremendously in the last 25 years. I mean, you see the ratings for television for women's basketball last year, phenomenal. And yet, the NIL part for female athletes has a sexualization to it. Is that troubling?
Well, it is troubling. It's troubling to me, the sexualization part. But it's also troubling to me about the non-revenue sports. I mean, a tennis player, a volleyball player, a swimmer, he or she is putting in, I can assure you, the same amount of time in their sport that the revenue sport athlete, student athlete is. And so... And some people would say, well, that's because that young man is generating revenue. Well, what people don't really understand is there's only a handful of institutions that are money makers. The majority of institutions in this country in Division I athletics are not, they're revenue producers, but they're not generating, putting money to the bottom line.
They're not profitable.
They're not profitable. And so they're either subsidized by institutional subsidy or state funds or, of course, fundraised dollars or ticket revenues. But we're only talking about a handful of institutions that are making a profit for college athletics. And that's what a lot of people don't understand.
Which allows the television networks to drive the realignment.
Exactly. And, you know, even the basketball... even the basketball schools, the Blue Bloods, for example, University of Kentucky, always known for men's basketball. Just heard today that the football coach, Coach Stoops, is now making more money than John Calipari. Who would have ever thought? Who would have ever thought that that would be happening in Kentucky? I worked in Kentucky for 9 years. I would have never thought that. Now, he's done a great job. Don't misunderstand me, you know. And but you know, even the Blue Bloods, it's all about football. And that's where, and so between football and men's basketball, we're in the, at the Power Five level, we're paying a lot of money.
Again, hindsight's 20/20. But does it perhaps make the most sense for? You insert the number, but let's just use 50 for an example, that the 50 biggest football brands come together and have their own conference in some capacity and leave the other sports in their existing geographical conferences. Would that have made the most sense and still accomplish the money grab that has taken place?
Well, I think that's what's going to happen. I don't know.
So you still think that's going to happen?
I think it may. I mean, what do I know? But I think it's as good a thought as anything. Not that I necessarily support that, but I do think that there has always been an attitude out there of let's pull out the Power Fives. Let's take the institutions that are investing the most in athletics. And let them do their thing. And to the point, they're already doing it anyway. You know, basically they're doing that anyway. But now we're talking about, okay, let's just take football out of the equation and let everybody else be in there together and make it geographical. What bothers, and that may be what happens. Won't be surprised that it doesn't. But you want to go back and talk about the realignment. You're an ACC guy. Do you really think that student athlete, North Carolina, on the women's basketball team or on the men's tennis team, wants to get on a plane and fly all the way to Palo Alto in the middle of the week to play a tennis match? Or then, you know, that those guys from Palo Alto are going to fly all the way into Chapel Hill? It's crazy. the college presidents, the athletic directors, understandably so, are worried about the revenues and how are they going to pay for all this. But we lose natural rivalries. Maryland going to the Big Ten when it's an ACC country makes no sense to me. Okay, it makes no sense to me. You lose those natural rivalries. And then, you know, Stanford, you've got those natural rivalries in the Pac-12. Now the Pac-2.
Not going to play UCLA.
That makes no sense. I mean, I remember when I grew up here, you know, OVC. We were playing Middle. Great rivalry. We're playing Western Kentucky. Great rivalry. Western Kentucky playing Eastern Kentucky. Great rivalry. Who's our rivalry now? I don't know who Tennessee Tech's rival is. You know, I have no idea. And so, is it Austin Peay? Well, Austin Peay's in another conference. And so, I think you lose a lot. I think you lose a lot when you start doing all this realignment, and you lose so much in terms of fan loyalty. The other thing I wanted to say about this portal, and you hadn't asked me about the portal yet, and I'm not as knowledgeable about it as I should be, to be honest. But, you know, I made a comment the other day about the portal. And I know the NCAA is talking about reducing the time from 60 to 30 days, which I think makes better sense. But, you know, if you got all these kids transferring all over the place, for whatever reason, most of them not good reasons, what does that do to your alumni? Am I an alum of this institution, or am I an alum of that institution? And what does that do to your development? You know, what does that do to your fundraising? So these are things that institutions need to be thinking about.
Fascinating conversation we're having with Dr. Diane Murphy as we talk about athletics. Probably around your television set, you're gathering with friends to watch football. You've had these same kind of discussions that we're getting the chance to have with Dr. Diane Murphy about the state. What's lost in the transfer portal? How are these students getting degrees?
Well, like I said, I'm not as knowledgeable about the transfer portal as I should be. There have always been ways in the past that if a young man or young woman needed to transfer, there were ways to do that. I struggle with you invest a lot of time and energy and money into recruiting a young man or a young woman to come to your institution. And they get there and they get unhappy because they're not playing. Are they unhappy because the coach raised his voice to her one day in practice? And I'm not for abusive coaches. That's not what I'm saying. Or they don't like the uniforms that they wear for whatever silly reason. And, of course, there are legitimate reasons. And then they decide to go into the portal because they think the grass is greener somewhere else. And then they go somewhere else. And then they realize it's not. So now they got to do the same thing again. And so I just think that we have really lost our way with the portal. Now, do I think that coaches need to do a better job in the recruiting process of really understanding what is the right fit for that young man or that young woman? Yes, I do, because I think you can really do a better job. And I think the recruits can do a better job of determining fit of that institution. But I think we often get that, you know, the athlete gets swayed by all the things that don't really matter, you know, all the hoopla, you know, all the rah-rah stuff, but they forget, well, how far away from home is it? Who's my coach going to be? Who am I going to play with? Can my parents come and see me play? That's what matters really, really. What kind of degree can I get? You know, does it feel good? Does the campus feel good for me? And we coaches, the coaches do the same thing. They get enamored by an athlete who can jump out of the gym, but maybe he or she's not the right fit. You know, they're 4,000 miles away from home. They've never been in a small town. They grew up in the city of New York, and now you're asking them to come to Cookeville, Tennessee. Not going to work. So I think there's a lot of work that can be done on the front end by both the student, the recruit, and by the college coach, so that when a young man or a young woman gets there, at least there's a better chance to make it work. But I'm not a portal fan. You can probably tell that. And so I'm hoping this narrowing it from 60 days to 30 days is going to help.
Should we be accused of being purely negative about college sports? Let's end our conversation with Dr. Diane Murphy this way. At the end of the day, there's still something about winning a big game. There's still something about the teamwork that goes into this. There's something about the bond that holds these athletes together. There are stories of young men and young women who come off the bench and do something that they never thought they'd get the chance to do. Is that what kept you in it for so long?
What kept me in it, quite frankly, are the student athletes. You watch a young woman or young man come in at 17 or 18 years old. You watch them for 4 years and they leave. They're a very different person. They look different physically. They think different analytically, cognitively. They come in with very narrow views of people and the world and life. And they graduate and they've been exposed to all kinds of ideas in the classroom by the faculty and by the teachers who've asked them to think. And so to me, you know, watching a young man or young woman win a championship or win a meet or get a chance to play, to me, that's what college athletics is all about.